I'd like to call the November 26th Monroe City Council meeting to order. Edie, if you would take roll call, please.
Council members present and establishing the quorum are as follows: Gehring, Cutaback, Williams, Camp, Gamble, and Hanford. Student representative Visotka is also in attendance.
All right, let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, next we'll take comments from citizens. This time is set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. I have two people signed up, so I'll start with Kinoko. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Kinoko Morikawa. Last name is spelled N-O-B-O-R-I-K-A-W-A. My address is P.O. Box 472, Everett 98206. And I'm here on behalf of the Communities of Color Coalition. And I'm going to read our letter into the record for the benefit of the other people who don't have a copy, but I know the rest of the council members have a copy of it. We are an all-volunteers group of citizens who work with community in Sonoma County on issues of racism, discrimination, and inclusion. Over the years, we have participated in the Monroe Diversity Committee and held workshops in Monroe in 2008 and 2009 about how racism affects the health of Latino immigrants. Currently, we also convene the annual North Puget Sound Conference on Race, which we meet at Edmonds Community College in 2014. The Pacific Science Center is currently hosting the exhibit, Race, Are We So Different? This exhibit began touring in 2007 and has been to 25 cities across the nation, sparking conversations and building greater understanding of this difficult subject. It accomplishes this by focusing on three main themes: the everyday experience of race, the history of the idea of race in the United States, and the science that is challenging some commonly held beliefs about race. This exhibit will be at the Pacific Science Center until July 5th, 2014. We feel that the council, city staff, and diversity committee, as well as the community, would benefit from this exhibit to learn more about the issues of race and how it affects our community. As Monroe continues to become more diverse, we all need to continue educating ourselves to better understand this thing we call race. In conjunction with the exhibit, the Race and Social Justice Initiative is offering free pre-exhibit and post-exhibit group workshops to help participants get the most out of the exhibit. There are about 30 community members in Snohomish County who have been trained as facilitators by the Seattle Office for Civil Rights so that these workshops are being held here in Monroe. We encourage the city to sponsor a group. Registration for workshops closes on December 5th. Now in its 8th year, the RSJI has been making changes in the way Seattle does business to become more responsive to its citizens and their needs. C3 would like to also suggest that when the City of Monroe is looking at policies, procedures, and budget decisions, something similar to the RSJI Racial Equity Toolkit is used to see whether the outcome of the decisions being made are making Monroe a more equitable or less equitable place to work, live, and raise our children. In closing, we'd also like to let you know about the 2014 Racial Equity State Legislative Agenda Workshop that will be held on Tuesday, December 3rd from 6 to 8 p.m. at the New Holly Gathering Hall in Seattle. And also in your packet, the second to the last page is this map here. And for the audience, and this is the most connected student council meeting I've ever been to. You can Google this, Google racial.map, and this, the whole United States will come up. This is based on the 2010 census data, and it was put together by the University of Virginia Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service. And this is Monroe. So the map that I put into your packet is Monroe. You can see here the dots, the blue dots are, and so these categories here for white, black, Asian, Hispanic, and other race, this is, it comes up straight out of the census from the box that you have to check off when you fill out your census form. And they color-coded it. So you can see Monroe, it's fairly blue, which is white. There are some places that have a lot of mustard colors, which is the Hispanic checkbox. One in particular, this one down here, this almost solid mustard. And so when we see things like that, kind of like, it's like, okay, why is this happening? Another city that I went to, it had a really disparate thing going on, and we suggested that they look into it more and see what's happening there, because it looks like there may be some unfair housing practices going on in that particular city. You'll also notice this, I don't think this is really technically part of the city. Is this the penitentiary? Okay, so there's a lot of green dots there. There's a lot of disparate, in terms of incarceration rates, there's disparate incarceration for African Americans. This little yellow piece, I went to go check out what might be going on with that, because that's the type of thing C3 does. It's this census tract here, and it looks like there's a whole lot of apartment buildings that you have there. And so that's probably what's tracking that, because what they do is the census tract, they'll randomly put those yellow dots in there, because they can't identify it to the exact address. But those are the types of things when we talk about equity and our request that the city look at some of the practices and things that go on in the city. And we're not saying that there's any racism problem with Monroe. We just know that in terms of institutionalized racism, that things that happen, you know, like when the city was incorporated way long time ago, that some of those things have carried forward, and some of those things may be preventing people who are qualified from being in those positions or, being able to take advantage of some of our services that are provided by government agencies. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, next, John Mannix.
I might ask you to take one of these and pass them around. John Mannix, Assistant Superintendent, Monroe Public Schools. And I've got a set of documents coming around to you that I'm going to speak from this evening.
So you can just get your address for the
record. 200 East Fremont Street. The first document is a list of portables or modular classrooms, our inventory of such. And they're listed by school with use and general condition. The second page shows that we have a total of 41 such units. And you can see that a few of them are highlighted in red. They're in such poor condition, we've closed them to use by students. They're scheduled for demolition as soon as we can afford to demolish them. And one is used by our transportation department for a driver's staff room. So we have 36 portable units that are currently available and being used on virtually a daily basis for educating students. If you'll turn one more page to the page that has the yellow highlights and banding, this is the utilization of those classrooms based on enrollment data that is current this month. So we have each of the portables listed again in school, the type of use, whether it's special education or occupational therapy, physical therapy, computer lab classroom, whatever. Whether it's used full day at the elementary level or how many periods of the day it might be used if it's a special needs facility or at the secondary schools. And then the number of students and the average number of students per period. And what I'd like you to see is the two numbers in the boxes at the bottom. Every day and the average class period, there are 715 students that are attending school or being educated in portable classrooms here in Monroe and in Maltby. The reason the larger number there, 2,303, is because at the secondary level, again, there's multiple groups of 24, 25, 28 students going through that one portable in 4, 5, or 6 periods a day. So I can justify any number between 715 and the theoretical 2,303, but we know it's more than 715 because we have multiple students moving through one portable at the secondary level. So we typically talk about 900, and I just want to show you the spread. We're obviously not trying to say it's the theoretical maximum there, but roughly 900 students a day, 900 individual young people, males and females, are being educated in portables on a daily basis here in Monroe. And then on the final page, I've done an analysis of provide classroom space, starting with the most recent set of portable classrooms that we just purchased and installed at Chain Lake Elementary this summer. It's a two-classroom unit. It was one unit, but two classrooms in it. With engineering, the portable itself, permits and fees, utilities, furniture, and the tech package that we provide, spent over a little over $221,000 to provide two classroom spaces for growth and expansion. If you take a look at our student generation rates, which comes out of the most recent 2012 capital facility plan that is submitted both to Snohomish County and the City of Monroe, we get a student generation rate of 0.615 per family. So 200 new homes coming into our area would generate 123 students. Those 123 students would require five classrooms, five additional teaching spaces. If you take the $221,000, which was for two, and ramp that up for five classroom spaces, it's $545,727.73 to provide those five classroom spaces. Mitigation rates at a 25% discount provide $595,200. So it covers the $545,000 we need to buy the portable and gives us about $50,000 left over that can be put into buying future land for a new school at some point down the road or future permanent construction. At a 50% discount, it's only $396,800, and we're left holding the bag for a huge chunk of change to provide those five classrooms. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to try and answer them. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, I was just going to ask one question.
Go ahead. Yes, please.
So this is assuming dollars now.
Correct.
I mean, this doesn't assume
today's dollars, not future inflated dollars.
Right. Okay.
Correct.
I just want to point that out. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Nancy Truepierce.
Nancy Truett Pierce. I'm on the Monroe School Board. My address is 12003 Woods Creek Road in Monroe. I also have a handout. It's collated, so you just take the top one and pass it along. Thanks. And I'm glad to be back. Thank you guys for continuing to serve in our city. And I know how big a job it is, and I really appreciate it. I understand that school mitigation is coming before you again, so we thought we'd come back and update you a little bit on where things are. It has changed from last year, but it hasn't gotten better. So, as Mr. Mannix said, we had 34 portables last year, now we have 36. We had about 800 kids in portables last year, now we have about 900 kids in portable. We had about 850 last year. We also went from $90 million in deferred maintenance to $117 million in deferred maintenance in our schools. I expect that to grow. One example is that we've got hot water running in a dishwasher at Park Place Middle due to a broken valve. We haven't been able to get to it yet because we have about half the maintenance staff that you would normally see in a district this size. Two of them were sick this year, and we had a water main break at Chain Lake. So, you know, we contend, and I think those kind of catastrophic failures are going to increase since we've got $100 million in deferred maintenance. And as Mr. Mannix told you, we've added some more portables. So it's worse than last year, not better. It's still a really bad idea to lower mitigation fees for schools. We need all the capital help we can get. We have done some things to try to address this. I thought you'd like to know. One is that we took three parcels that we know we can't use that are land. We've tried to surplus those. We've surplused those, and we're trying to sell them now. One had a pretty mature stand of trees, so we cut those trees, sold the trees, and that money is now coming into our capital budget. Actually, ends up being a little bit of money that wasn't just mitigation fees. So we aren't just sitting on mitigation fees alone. We now actually have some money from those trees, too, in there. We had had a citizen committee we formed to look at our total facilities and do a long-range facilities plan. So that committee is about halfway through its work. We expect to come out with a long-range plan when they're finished. Part of how we got into this situation is that during the recession and after a rapid period of growth, we put almost all of our eggs into teaching and classroom support. I think you'll remember that a couple of years ago, the state auditor went out and reviewed all 295 school districts in the state of Washington. And they found that the school district in Monroe had less money to work with overall, but put a much higher percentage, not a much higher, put a higher percentage of that money into teaching than administration or maintenance. And that's how we got here, is that through the downturn, we protected the classroom. We protected the teaching in the school district, and our facilities took it in the teeth. So we are behind. It is a crisis for this town, and it's something that we need your help to write. There's really only a couple of sources of capital. Bond is the best. Capital levy also works pretty well. Mitigation fees are a very small percentage, but it's a really important one because it helps us adjust to growth more quickly than we ever could if we waited for the bonds to go through. We're also very concerned with the action to change the authority for who sets the fees. What logic would you use to decide that amount? I think you know that the county is the one that sets the mitigation fees. We get that from them. We don't make it up on our own. And it looks to me, from looking at it now over the last year, they're doing pretty good. They've got a pretty good analysis that they use to decide. That's why ours is different than Snohomish, because our situation is different than Snohomish. So how would you decide it? And how often would you decide it? It takes us 9 months to a year to get ready for new kids coming in. And we don't get to turn them away. We either have to overcrowd the schools or we have to put in capacity for them. Mr. Maddie's already said that the 75% gets close to covering that. The 50% does not. The other thing I put in your packet, so I put two things in your packet. One was a letter we had during the testimony in front of the Planning Commission. There was some confusion about what money is in our capital budget. The real confusion about that is that the capital budget doesn't sit with money in it. If we pass a bond, we go out and borrow the money, we build a Frylands Elementary School, there's no money in the capital budget anymore because it's all been spent. Now we're collecting money, taxes, and we're paying off the debt, but that's in our debt service fund. It's not in our capital fund. You know, so I think that's the confusion on that. But I wanted you to see that letter. The other thing I gave you was your complete schedule of fees. So as you look at how you can become more competitive as a town, and how can you attract people to want to live here, then there are a lot of fees that you can take a look at. Right now, you guys have done a great job. We are ahead on parks. We're in really good shape on parks. And if you ever needed to build more parks, you can pass your own bonds. That's something that you have the right to do. So right now, as leaders together in this town, we're ahead on parks, behind on school facilities. And so how can we work together so that we can correct this and make this the best possible place for people to choose to come and meet families and raise their kids here. Thanks for your help.
Thank you.
Any questions? I could talk longer.
I had a question.
Councilmember Gill.
So,
was there a question?
I meant too late for her to walk.
No. Well, I had a question.
Hi, Jason.
Hey, how are you?
Nice to see you.
Where are we? And last time we were talking about the study that was going on. The bond is.
So where are we after passing the bond?
Can you bring us up to date on where we are with that process?
The bond that we passed in 2003 is paid off in 2016. So our plan is to go out in 2015 to pass the next bond so that we can keep the taxpayers' rates flat, because they'll finish paying off one when we bring the other one on. That's the plan. This February, we are back up with the learning levy, and the learning levy is the 21-22% of the local dollars to cover operations for the school. It doesn't go toward capital unless we have no other capital. And then we're also passing we're hoping to pass a technology levy, so technology is pretty far behind too. So that's coming up in February, and then the next cycle after that, we'll go out for the bond. And that's why we've got a committee working right now to do a complete analysis of all of our schools and see what it would make most sense. I think if we rebuilt, we wouldn't have to have as much deferred maintenance. So we want to look at those trade-offs. Anything you'd want to... Mr. Maddox is the complete expert on this.
Anything to add?
No, just the committee's about halfway through its work. We're planning on taking a recommendation to the board of directors in late June, early July. We have been looking into a lot of history, and visiting all of the schools and looking at the deferred maintenance and the small capital needs list and everything else, demographics, future growth projections, anything and everything that that committee is interested in taking a look at. So we're just unfortunately not at the point to have a final recommendation yet.
So the intent would be to focus on what I'm hearing, focus on the learning levy for 2014, and then have every all your ducks in a row for 2015.
That's correct.
Yeah, and to just keep recruiting as much support as we can get from key leaders that want to sign on and help us do that.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
All right, at this time, we would like to have the student representative report.
Hi. So there's not much new business that's happening in the school district this week, but besides last week, the winter sports started up, so basketball, boys and girls, boys swimming, and wrestling began, and the first home basketball game is next Wednesday, and it's a girls' game, and wrestling will be happening after that. But then there are a couple recognition things that I wanted to bring to you guys that we had some outstanding students that we wanted to recognize. And the first one was Cameron Lee. He's a sophomore this year and he's very involved in drama. And he got the Rising Star Award, which is an award given out by the Fifth Avenue Theater because he's just extremely talented, and he's has one of the lead roles in a play that's happening down there right now. And it's a huge honor, especially for someone so young. I think so. And then also, Evan Wang and Eric Graywall are two seniors this year, and they announced last week, I believe, that or it was announced last week that they, out of like all the students in the nation, based on their PSAT scores, they're national merit semifinalists. So out of like all the students in the country, they're some of the top. And that's like a huge, huge deal. So that was all I have for you guys this week. Any questions?
Thank you, Keith, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I really have one item on the consent agenda. Councilmember Nearing,
move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
We have a motion from Councilmember Deary, a second from Councilmember Camp. Seeing no other lights, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried, 6-0. All right, first item on new business is Council direction regarding the water rate study, and that's Brad.
Thank you. We had planned as part of the 2015 comprehensive plan update to do new system plans for our water system, sewer system, and stormwater system. And part of that would be to do a rate study to check for the appropriate rates and the correct amount that we're charging in capital improvement fees. The owner of one of the apartment buildings on Village Way has approached council regarding the way we bill for multifamily residents, as we bill for each unit as a separate entity and pay the whole meter, the whole monthly fee, as opposed to just having one fee with water consumption. We've been asked by him to see if we can move that up, so we're asking the council if they'd like to move that up, to start that process right now, as opposed to waiting until the end of 2014 when we were planning on doing that. The only kind of downside to that is it may cost, that may require us to do something over again when the land use element of the comprehensive plan gets done. That may change densities in some area, which would require us to do some more studying after that. Any questions?
Councilmember Gary.
Thanks. I just want to make sure I understood what you said. Which of those two options will cause possible rework?
If we start earlier,
if we start earlier. Okay.
Do it over again if we get new information regarding what the future land use of the city is going to be.
Okay. That really being the big draw. The reason to start earlier would be because of the request,
mm-hmm. correct?
That we did receive. Okay. So let's say we don't. Let's say we wait until 2015 per your recommendation mm-hmm. here. What happens? We've already considered what to do. At least we've already talked about a little bit about what to do there.
Yeah, we corrected the one problem we had for the nonprofit,
right.
Low income senior housing,
right.
And we changed their rates, but we haven't changed the other rates, or we didn't correct the inequity that that owner thinks exists.
Okay, I was thinking that the action we had taken had corrected, so it hadn't.
No, it did not address this problem.
This would still, okay, and we were talking about like with some height and all kinds of stuff, were we not?
Right. Basically, the question is whether or not, right now, for a single family, you get one unit of measure. You pay for the meter once.
Right.
So it's like $29 a month. For multi-families, we charge $29 a month for each unit, which, you know, could be considered unfair because we're only reading one meter, so that cost is the same and they're just using more water. So I've done some quick calculations and it turns out that that's about, we'd have to raise everybody's rates by about 13% in order to make up for the lost revenue from doing it the way that was suggested by the owner of the apartment building.
So by not taking action then on that, that's essentially that particular person, they just need to wait until the results of this, which wouldn't begin until about a year from now.
Correct.
Is when we would be kicking this off.
Right.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Cutback.
Thank you. Brad, when we did the specific ordinance for the low-income senior housing.
Nonprofit.
There was very specific guidelines. And they had to deal with housing only. I remember we had put something in there that it would stay valid until we did the rate study. Was there any other limitation on time that we had to do a rate study within a certain time?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Gannon.
Yeah, and if I remember, I mean, the nonprofit, it was our error in the building, and that's was one of the issues why we took action to correct it. The property owner that's making the request has known all along.
Correct.
Right? That this is, you know, the building rating structure. So we took care of the inequity. We're going to take care of it through the rate study at the end of the year. They just want to break now. But they already know and have known all along that that's the rate structure.
Correct.
Right?
All
right.
Yes.
Brad, what is the strategy for going into the rate study? I guess what I'm concerned about is, you know, we're going to have somebody come in and study this, but if we don't really tell them what our goals are, what we have right now seems like it's pretty confusing. Since I've been on council, we've had probably 6 to 10 people come and have complaints about their water. And in some ways, we have the multifamily low-income designation, which the gentleman that you're referring to falls into that category, and he's now treated differently than the multifamily low-income nonprofit. So according to what he said, is that I'm required to keep my apartment complex low-income, but because I'm not a nonprofit, I have the same class of tenant in my building, but this other group gets a much cheaper water rate than I do. We have the issue that the laundromat brought up, where they're drying their water; it's not going down the sewers. We've had a couple people come in with my water's been running and I wasn't there, and my bill's $700. We need relief on that. We had complaints about people that don't live in the house getting charged water. We've had people that are asking about when they go on vacation that they don't have to pay water. We also have the issue that I believe is true, where a one- or two-person household pays a higher percentage for their water than a five-person household, that it's not completely equitable based on consumption. And then we have senior designations and other low-income designations. That seems crazy to me. Like, it seems like we're all over the board with what we're trying to accomplish. So has there been any thought or strategy put into what is our goal going forward? Is our goal to keep it very complicated? Is the goal to make sure we end up with the same amount of revenue? Is the goal to reduce water consumption? Just in terms of that, where are we at?
Absolutely.
Yes. I think is the answer to your question.
The answer is 42.
Reduce water consumption. The more equitable you make it, the more complicated you make it. So that's also why we're not recommending going ahead with it now, because that has not been determined yet. So that's part of the process of getting to the rates that he'd be getting at the end of next year, is to go through that and what's the council's desire, you know, and state laws and things like that about what you want to do. Because there's, you know, several different ways you can do the water billing, just the monthly fees. Everybody's got a meter. How much does it take to operate the system based on no water consumption, and divide that by the number of meters, and then just charge them slightly more than whatever pays charges us for the water? Or you can do what we do now, is you have a certain amount of water you get for free as part of your meter cost, and then if you have a very small family, one person, two people, you don't use your whole base allowance, so then you're paying for more than you should be. There's other ways of doing it. If you use more water, you pay for more pipe replacement, because you need a bigger pipe getting to you than somebody who uses a little less water. So it can get very complicated very quickly. We need to look into that before we start doing our rate study.
Yeah, and I'm all in favor of doing the rate study, but I would be more in favor of knowing what our end goals and objectives are. For years, I was a two-person household, and my water bill doesn't change no matter how much water I use. So there's no, if I want to leave my water on all night, big deal, it's not going to cost me any money.
Right.
That seems like that's not what we really want to do. And to streamline this approach also seems like it would be a good objective. We typically hear when we're being told stuff like this, if we do that, it's going to reduce our revenue. And so again, if that's our goal, that we need to keep our revenue number the same regardless, I would just like to know those things before we go into hiring a consultant and doing a rate study, which I believe we have to do. But simplifying this, what I think is way too complex, should also be something that's an objective. So, all right, thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, I concur with Councilmember Williams. I move to conduct the utility rate study schedule as part of the 2015 comprehensive plan update, including cost of service and rate structure analysis.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Pettibeck. Seeing no other lights, we'll call for a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. All right, next up, discussion funding street maintenance. And I'm pulling that up, so I
guess who that is. Brad. This is me, too. I guess the bottom line is that we need more money for streets. And most of the ways to get it involve raising taxes. So there's a well-run street maintenance program costs about $60 a square yard per year, and that's about $575,000 for the amount of streets the city of Monroe currently has. But also, since we haven't been doing good maintenance for a while, there's some upfront cost of things that have to be replaced before we get there. But for an ongoing program, we need about $575,000 a year. That is just for the street maintenance itself, not counting the approximately $120,000 I think it is we now pay for streetlights each year. The cost of snowplow, anti-icing, things like street sign maintenance, things like that. So that's just maintaining the pavement. Or the cost of replacing wheelchair ramps, handicap access ramps that we have that need to be replaced to meet current standards. So there's nine different options that staff had brainstormed on how to increase the amount of money that was going to the street maintenance fund. And those are on your cover sheet, attachment one. And then there's also the spreadsheet showing the 1% property tax increase, how much money that would generate on an annual basis, and then also the, by the compounding of that rate, there's a, you know, after 6 years, there's a substantial amount of money that we've left behind if we, as when we don't collect that extra 1%. And I think that's all I have.
Councilmember Gehring. Thank you. I do appreciate Councilmember Kettleback originally brought this up, trying to get something done a little bit earlier. Certainly appreciate the need. While we do have it funded for this year, but we have nothing for in 15. Remember
that. Yeah, there's a little bit because we get some gas tax money and things like that, but that's less than we should be spending.
Indeed. The recommended action is January. It would be better to, should we say first quarter, give you some flexibility? We can do it in January. Is that the urgency of, let's make sure we do it in January right up front? I think last time we talked about first quarter, I've just made a little more flexibility, need more time to put things together, but you do already have a list here, so.
Right, I think it's just to make sure it happens quickly so yeah. We don't end up at the end of the year, it's still haven't got anything done.
Absolutely. And I remember we had talked about at least, you know, first quarter. I think it was Diane had said something to that effect. So definitely need to talk about it. I appreciate it. So I would, do we need to move to council to direct staff to schedule a council retreat in January 2014 to address funding structure of street maintenance?
So that's a motion if we need one.
It just says schedule, but do we need a motion? If not, then I'll just say I'm in favor of scheduling a council retreat in January 2014.
Okay.
Either way. And, all right. Thank you. Thanks.
Brad, I'm also in favor of something in the first quarter, whether it's January or not.
Yeah.
And I would be open to a Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday workshop.
Yeah.
To get through this. So whatever it takes,
let's get that done.
We're actually going to need past council members to participate.
That was Ben.
Thank you.
All right. Councilmember Kettleback.
Thank you. Brad, I just have one question. I guess I'm not quite understanding how to read these charts here. I mean, I understand there are sales tax revenue, but is this...
Are you looking at the long one?
Yeah, maybe it didn't all print out, or I guess I could see you after. I'm trying to get a sense of how she put the data together and what. Because I understand that this table is talking about items for the option four on the list. Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll see you after the meeting. I want to make sure I understand.
Okay.
How to read that as we continue to talk about this. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Seeing no other lights, I guess we will take that as consensus and move forward. All right. Next up is the 2013 Comprehensive Plan for Parks and School Mitigation Plans. Paul.
Discount. That's a caveat for those numbers. And then we're also going to want to talk a little bit about parking impact fees. Mike. So, you first considered this back in, what, a year ago, fall of 2012, and it's back now, it's one of our three 2013 comp plan amendments. This one has lots of moving parts. There's the capital facilities element and adopting the school district plans, changing the municipal code to match what we're doing in the comp plan, and cleaning up a lot of language in the process. And of course, what the meat of this comes down to is the process is to get the regulatory language out of the comp plan where it doesn't belong and keep it in policy, and then to clarify those regulations in the municipal code. But it comes down to the discount rate, whether it's going to be 25% or 50%. And we'll have some more discussion about that. This is back, as I said, with the other amendments for final action this year. We'll be back on December 10th for a first reading on all the amendments, and December 17th. And the Planning Commission, we've had to postpone our next meeting, but we'll be meeting on December 9th, and we'll be bringing recommendations from the Commission to your meeting on December 10th on all these amendments. Okay, I've covered this. This is basically all these things that we're trying to deal with. In terms of the impact fees, this gives you a quick look. I think this is in your cover sheet too, but it simply shows in Monroe the last couple of iterations, but for 2012, $2,900 and some dollars at 25%, a little under 2,000 at a 50% discount was for a single family home, and the same numbers or the same breakdown for duplex and multifamily. $4,900 with the 25% and $3,100 and some dollars for the 50%. That means you can see the difference for Monroe. And then Snohomish, of course, is at $896 or $1,344 with no impact fee for the residents that are not single family detached. That comparison sheet, if you can visualize 50% of the numbers, gives you a snapshot of the other jurisdictions in Snohomish County that do use the 50% discount. Some have similar exemptions, some have, actually most all have the same requirements in terms of when the fees are due and payable at the time you issue a building permit. But part of this effort here is to make some decisions about the process, and then of course the code defines the discount rate. The comp plan used to, but now we're using the municipal code to say, okay, the discount rate is now 25% or is now 50% as calculated through the county formula. We're using the same county formula that every other jurisdiction does. It's just where we differ on the discount rate. I might ask Mike, this might be a good point. Can I raise that, what you were telling me?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Brad informed me that transportation mitigation fees, traffic mitigation fees, are going to go down 4% this next year. And I want to ask Mike to share some information about parking fees, what we're thinking.
Thank you. Yes, Council, we've been looking at park impact fees as well. And knowing that, you know, we are already beginning the update, the comp plan, and that includes not only transportation but also parks. Part of that, you know, as far as objectives of the park plan update is a review and new listing of CIP projects and the associated costs of those. So we have a costs and funding strategy, And within that would be a recalculation of the parking impact fees and methodology for that. So the time frame, of course, for this is estimated to be about 18 months. So that puts us out about mid-2015 when that would be adopted. But in the meantime, what I've looked at is we've looked at projects we've already completed, because here we are 6 years past our last update. We have been able to accomplish some things, but also some priorities, projects have changed as far as they've dropped off. And one example is the former landfill site is no longer considered something that would be considered a park project. So we looked at recalculating using the same formula, the existing formula, and actually that would lower the park impact fee. And as Paula mentioned earlier, due to history of us having the actual fees listed in the comp plan, the process we understand at this point in time is that we would need to have council direct us to make an amendment to the comp plan. And so as far as moving forward with that, the earliest we could see would be the beginning of 2014. We could look at amending the comp plan. But we have asked our attorney to review that with, as far as the comprehensive plan, the city code, and that kind of separation of policy and the actual formula with the two. So we could look at, one benefit of that would be for parks is we could look at that on an annual basis. So some years we may see that, no change is needed here as far as that impact fee. And in some cases, it may need it to change it, whether it's upward or downward, that those changing priorities. So that's where we're at right now with that. So you'll see more information coming to you about that. So thanks.
Be happy to try and take some questions.
I'll start. So just so I'm clear, as soon as we can review the parks number and make any changes to that, what is that date? When can that happen?
I believe the way that would work is that come 2014, the council can initiate a comp plan amendment for park impact fees. There will be no typical cycle of comp plan amendments that are typically due at the end of July for consideration in 2015, since we're doing this 2015 update. We'll be taking queries from citizens or landowners who would like to make a change in their land use, and we'll consider those as part of this process. But if we initiate the process in January, it's a matter of going through the review of the proposal with the Planning Commission, bring it back to Council for your consideration. It could be a fairly short-term project. It would not be a year long. We can amend the comp plan once during the year.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be the end of the year.
So quarter one of next year, we could theoretically be addressing possible impact.
Certainly
quarter one. And I want to add again, that would be ahead of the completion of the park plan update, where there would be, so there would be a sort of an interim park impact fee.
Okay.
And part of the process, we would take the impact fee requirements and numbers out of the comp plan, out of the park plan, and put them in the municipal code where they belong.
Okay. Councilmember Hammer.
Yes, thank you. I remember the last time we talked about this, Paul, thank you for kind of refreshing our memories as well. But I remember when we talked about it, one of the concerns that I know I had, and I believe some other council members, was if we're going to look at lowering these fees, Let's look across the board. And so I appreciate Mike bringing that about the parks and looking at all the different avenues. I'm wondering, besides parks and school fees, what looked at ways to lower the fees. And the reason I ask is because of all of the constituents that I've heard from, I haven't heard from anyone that says, you know, we really should lower the school district fees and, you know, just have them deal with their own financial issues, and we need that money, and let's make things more affordable here in Monroe for builders and things like that. I haven't heard any of that from anyone. And so I've heard a lot of the opposite. So I'm just, right off the bat, it doesn't make sense for me to support this, just based on everything I'm hearing from the constituents. And from what I'm seeing, it's not a huge enough savings for the city to say, hey, this totally makes sense. I mean, we're going to save $500,000 or, you know, whatever. It's not making sense for me. So maybe you could just fill us in on any other areas that you're still looking at or planning to look at in the coming future.
Okay. I can explain that for you. Say a building permit for a single family house, detached house. The fees that are paid at the building permit issuance are the building permit fees and the standard fees. The impact fees include the school impact fees, the traffic, and parks. The other large part of that formula is the capital fees for the sewer and water connection, which all together total up to $20-some thousand. A large part of the cost is in the sewer and water. The traffic mitigation fees are going down, granted not by much, by 4%. School impact fees are here, and the park impact fees, they could potentially be reduced a few hundred dollars in this short-term study next year. But I'm correct me if I'm wrong, Brad, but I think those are the points that we can that we require for pulling a permit, and not all of those are easily adjustable.
Doris,
yeah,
still have the floor. I think, and not at all to sound snobby or uppity, but Monroe is where it's happening right now. And so was just in an earlier conversation with Gene talking about the planning department gets a phone call every 5 to 10 minutes every day.
Depending on the day, there are days like that. Yes.
So
lately a lot about marijuana.
Well, you know how I feel about that. Anyway, back on the subject at hand. My point is, we're not like, you know, begging right now for people. Please come look at Monroe. You know, this is, as you know, you're working in the department. It's busy. You're on an overlook, and I just do not see the urgency, unless I'm missing something where there's, you know, a law or RCW that we have to adjust amounts or anything else. I just don't see the urgency for our city to be making a, such a major slash. If we can save a little here, 4%, you know, on the other, and the lawn parks, hey, that's great. But to worry about, to make such a drastic cut in schools, which is what builds up our, that's what makes our city so, one of the facets of our city that makes it so great. And I just don't see the worth.
We do have now somewhere in the range of, I'll say, 250 to 300 lots, single-family lots in the pipeline from very beginning stages to building houses. There's more out there, and nothing concrete at this point, but certainly there's potential for more projects coming online maybe next year, maybe the year after. The question, if what we have now is a bit of a bubble that's going to level off, because we have quite a bit in the works right now, and it may, I'm expecting that it's going to, that pace is going to drop as these things are developed. But there's more to come.
Thank you. Jeff, you got
to... Yeah, I'd just like to throw in a few comments, council member. The fee structure for a new house goes directly to the price point of the home. And one of the mandates under GMA is to satisfy your population allocation. And they're always under on our growth target. We need more residential capacity. The new lots coming into town are doing part of that. If you look at the impact fee numbers for 08, 12, and 10, and 12, that number continues to come down. And that number isn't coming down by accident. It's coming down because there's no population growth in the school district over the last 6 years. Attendance is remaining level. Schools are a big part of the equation when you go to purchase a home. Lake Stevens, for instance, has 1,000 lots under development right now. So we could be lucky enough to have that problem. I don't think we want that kind of a problem. That's really impactful, accelerated growth. Impact fees were never designed to be a governor on growth. By leaving them high, one would insinuate that perhaps we're trying to create an inflated market, make it more difficult for a builder to create a price point to build a home and create a business model that says, I can build a home, I can take my profit, and I can build a home that somebody's going to want to buy at the market price point that the real estate market determines. So when we looked at this last year, you asked us to look at all the fees. And what you've heard tonight is sewer and water are going to be looked at, and we're going to accelerate that process. Transportation is being looked at also. Parks, depending on, I think, what kind of opinion we get back from legal counsel, will determine how we go about readjusting impact fees for parks. It's clear that doing it once every 6 years, in fact, the comp plan recommends that we reanalyze that annually. We haven't done it for 6 years. Schools, and this is one area where I have a very hard time in that I don't want to be critical of the school district. That's a separate elected body. They make separate policy decisions. But you heard tonight, there's a massive amount of deferred maintenance in the school district. And there's not one thing that an impact fee can do to solve that problem for the school district. Impact fees can only be spent for new growth. So unless you're leaving the impact fee high because we're expecting this massive wave of growth to come in, and that money is going to be in this, to assist the school district in building new facilities, I think the equation is out of balance a little bit right now. The school district has deferred maintenance. They have an enormous number of children in portables. They also have an enormous amount of capacity in the built-in building. It's not adequate to put students in right now. Case in point, Frank Wagner right across the street. It's probably not used at capacity. Now, I'm not being critical of the school district, but what I am trying to remind council is that we have a mandate also focus on affordable housing. And the price point that a builder looks at is fees, land, construction costs, and profit. And if they can't build a home that's going to sell in the real estate market at the price point that's determined out of his control, the homes aren't going to be built. We have 250 lots under development. We don't have 250 permits under construction. So those lots may be created, but they may sit and linger. If the price point of the home doesn't reflect the cost of going to build. So I want to present that side of the equation. I know, and try to remind you that council, and this is why this comp plan update has gotten a little bit muddy in that it's a three-part deal. Number one, we're aligning our comp plan with the school district's capital facility rotation every 2 years. So we're getting that in line with the countywide planning policies. We're also removing regulatory language from the comprehensive plan that should have never been placed there to begin with. And the big controversy, I think the part that everybody is concerned about, and rightly so, is what the discount rate is going to be to this fee. And so those are three separate decisions that you need to make during this process. And the fee decision, I truly hope that analysis and that decision tree that you guys go through to make that decision doesn't impact the good planning and the good regulatory process that we're trying to create into the comp plan and in the zoning code. So just throwing that out there, asking you to be thoughtful about the process, trying to put good regulatory language into the comp plan to give you guys the authority to make the decisions you need to make for multiple mandates. The school district has a very focused activity, and that's educating our kids. And this state takes that very, very seriously. And you guys should take that seriously. But you also have that same mandate to make sure we have good roads, good housing, an array of affordable housing, a healthy business community, and the rest of the 13 goals under GMA. So that's my comment.
Thank you.
Councilmember Gamble.
All right. So I appreciate that we're talking about all of this stuff again. I guess, when I like to try to look at this in totality. And what I mean by that is also because we have a problem with our schools. And you brought something up that's, yes, it is, it's a separate elected body that turns over, and we have, a lot of, people, different reasons why we are where we are. I think collectively we need to look at is, okay, well, how do we get out of it going forward? And I'm speaking, and I get the regulatory language versus the discount fee, two separate conversations. As we start talking about a discount fee and associated with this, a 25% to a 50% is not going to make a difference to the, for affordable housing. I'm sorry. For me, that's not going to get passed on to the buyer in any way, shape, or form. We did talk about this last year. We researched it quite a bit at that particular point in time, and I don't see the connection in anywhere where they've done that. Lots of reading material on it. So, if I'm looking at this in the totality, then, hey, if we as a community are looking to 2014 for a learning levy and 2015 for, hey, we're all in on a bond, then why wouldn't we be looking for how do we maintain to get to the 2015? For me, that's not tapping into a discount fee that, yes, we are utilizing that for portables and the state that we're in now, and taking that away. Yeah, the population, I'm going to talk about, was brought up, the population has stayed the same. That was the comment that you made, right, Jeff?
The what?
The population has stayed the same when you made that comment over the last 6 years?
The student population.
The student roughly the same. Do you read it? Do you
want to respond?
Because I'd like a response to that.
Yeah, thank you, because I know it is confusing. This school district has made it a point to have as many different...
Hold on a second.
I'm sorry.
We can't do that. We've done it in the past. They're in the community.
Council approval will open this back up to members of the audience.
Yes.
All
right.
I think we need council consensus to open this back up.
Sure.
I have one point. This isn't a public hearing.
Yeah.
I think we should keep it to council discussions point. While I appreciate your opinion, I would like to just keep it. If we want to ask for your advice or for a discussion point later, I think it would be more appropriate than essentially having a public hearing. That's my take.
I'd just like to clarify that one point.
That's what I'm looking for, is a clarification. I got a comment from Jeff.
Yes.
It says the population has stayed the same for the last 6 years, and it's conflicting with the information that's been presented, that we have portables that we are purchasing to take care of new students that are rolling in. So it's conflicting with the testimony here and earlier. That's what
comment.
So clarification is, we're just looking for clarification on whether or not the student population has increased.
Yeah.
All right.
So in the buildings, it's increased. On our online program, which is statewide, that doesn't have kids in the schools, it has decreased pretty dramatically. They're retooling that program. They're going to make it a STEM online program. So they've reduced it quite a bit in population, which does mask our growth.
So
when you look at our total numbers, they look flat. But they're going down in the online program and up in the schools.
Thank you. So that, you know, for me, that makes sense to me. Because we are, you know, kind of a trendsetter in that, you know, side of the in schools, is, you know, our online piece. We have folks attending from OMAC, and I believe in, you know, different parts of the state. And you know, what we're talking about is a building issue here. So mitigation fees are used to help with that. I just don't see how we would be, if we truly want to bring investment in growth, we should be looking towards the schools as an asset. We should be building and doing everything we can as leaders within the community to help pass it on to, in 2015, and maintain what we have until then. That's my concern.
Okay.
Thank
you. So I'm going to respond to a couple of those points.
Sure.
Bring some of my own. I would agree with that, provided we were a governing body to make those decisions on behalf of the school board, but we're not. So while we might say it's in our best interest to get this stuff done, we have no authority to mandate and get any of that stuff done. What we are being asked to do is look at our impact fees globally, and while you may not believe that $2,000 will impact a builder, they're just like any other businessman when they look at what their house is, what they can sell for, what profit margin they need to make, and if it doesn't pencil out, they don't do it. So that, I think, is a little bit of a distinction between where you're coming from and where I'm coming from. I agree that we need to look at all of these numbers, schools, parks, and transportation. Of those, I think if you asked, in my opinion, if you asked someone randomly off the street, what's the biggest problem in Monroe right now, they would say it's transportation. We hear that all the time. It's the lowest one, and it's the lowest by far. And so, to me, I'm interested in lowering them where we can. I'm in favor of what we're proposing, and I'm also in favor of it, provided that when we talk about parks, we look at it under the same scrutiny and the same percentage, so that we're not just taking it out of schools alone and leaving everything else. There was a comment made earlier that we can pass our own bonds for parks. It was made by a member of the school board, which is true. The school can pass their own bonds for their capital projects as well. So that to me is equal footing. To Councilmember Hanford's point that he brought up about that we've only heard people talk against the school impact fees, not anybody else. Well, that's because it's the only one we've had on the agenda. And I can tell you when we start talking about parks, we're going to have people coming in before us, just like the school board has been good. And I had this conversation with Nancy earlier this week, that are going to be saying, our parks are decimated, we need more parks, we don't spend enough on parks. We'll have the same exact argument no matter where we're trying to make any types of cuts. So I'm in favor of what we can do to expand the Monroe as an attractive site to build good quality houses. And if our fees are out of line with what the jurisdictions closest to us are, we have two options. We either don't build a house or we build an inferior house, because they got to make that profit up somewhere. They're not just going to absorb that money. So I'm in favor of everything, but again, it's the caveat that we are also going to have the same discussion about parks as soon as we can legally have that discussion.
So just a point of clarification. I did not say it was an impact on the builder. My point in regard to that was is that it was being argued that it would help in for affordable housing. And what I'm saying is I don't believe that's not going to get passed on to the buyer. So that linkage to, you know, hey, if we do a school discount, greater school discount, it's going to help with, you know, affordable housing. I don't buy that. That's what I was referencing. I absolutely agree with you that from a builder's perspective, yes, it's going to make a difference and it goes to their bottom line, but it does not, in my opinion, it's not going to have an influence on the affordable housing piece, which was being argued previously. And then the other was, I get we are not the governing body over that, not our decision effect, but the decisions and the governing decisions that we make affect them, and a lot of stuff that they do affects our city and the stuff that we're at. And all I'm saying is that the more that we can work together collectively as we move forward with those decisions, the better off we're going to be as a community.
You're
absolutely
right.
Councilmember Geary.
Thinking about that, that pulled me.
I didn't push it.
The term affordable housing, some can be different definitions. Jeff, you brought that up. The, when you're talking about affordable housing, what's the definition you're using for that? Because there are some.
I'm talking about new homes that are selling in a park.
Okay.
And that is affordable housing.
New homes that are still on the market. All right. And Councilmember Hill, if I may ask you, is that the same? I feel like there's a difference in perhaps in terms. So new homes that are selling in market being affordable as affordable housing, is that your understanding? When you're talking about affordable housing, is that the same definition?
Yeah, and basically the linkage that was being made that I was responding to, right, was that this would have an impact on the ability to provide more affordable housing. I just don't see okay. Market value should be market value whether they're paying the fee or not.
And along the lines of thinking that actually this is the type of cost that the developer is going to pass along to someone. When I think about it, it does affect their bottom line. So certainly understanding what you're making, I think that could there could be an increase in the price of a house because does that make it affordable or not? From that standpoint, that's really the market decides what's affordable and what's not. I don't know, is there a county definition for affordable housing? I don't know if someone can answer that question. And is that, does it have to be, you know, under a certain price point for median income? I don't know if somebody has the definition for that. Because we're talking about different terms. I think it's important to talk about the same definition that we're talking about.
Right. There's different categories of affordable housing based on very low income. Low income, which I think is 30 to 50% of the average median income, which in Snohomish County is $67,000, almost $68,000. And then there's moderate income, which I believe is 50 to 80% of the that average median income. So there are different levels of affordability, and that goes with
what a some formula that what someone who makes X amount of money could pay, and then a house price cap. I guess I'm just trying.
Yeah, it's based on a certain percentage of your income and what you can put toward rent or purchase, and of course the very low income group has much less to put toward that cost. And the difference between what they can afford and what they may have in terms of assistance determines how cost burden that household is. The very low income homes are very cost burden, underwater in terms of what they can afford. And part of it is what's available, what's the supply. There are various levels of affordability, all the way up to people like me coming in and being able to afford to buy a house, you know, with a good income.
So that essentially, affordable housing can have a lot of different definitions.
Oh, yes.
There's the county definition. There's the what price is the market going? That's the and can you afford a house like that? Quite literally, affordable housing. Ultimately, what I'm looking at here, making Monroe an attractive place. Bond issue, I think, and I've had conversation with Nancy as well. You know, I'd love to have beautiful schools here, but that is separate from what our job is here, to Councilman Williams' point. And while that's something that I'm definitely interested in, to Councilman Gamble's point, pursuing, that is separate from our role. Ultimately, making this a place that is attractive, that builders do want to come, that people want
want to move and try to implement all the things that we've been talking about, economic development, that, making this place affordable, and does that drop in 25%? I guess that's the debate. Does that really make that much of a difference? We are looking at it as a whole. I'm okay reducing the numbers, but it's a good point as well. And traffic issues, probably we have a list of, what, $20 million transportation projects that, you know, aren't done yet. We got a great grant, that's great. Should we reduce those? And it just feels like the more we talk about this, sometimes it gets more muddy and more clear. You know, and just as I'm, you know, doing a little verbal thinking out loud here, the core goal for me is continue to make this place attractive. We have momentum. Our planning department is really busy. If reducing a fee here or reducing a fee there is going to help with that, that's something that I want to take seriously and consider. Is that really the benefit there may outweigh costs, and not trying to, you know, hose the school district, you know, nothing like that. I mean, I appreciate what, you know, what they're doing and what they're faced with. Something that tips someone in favor of doing business here versus somewhere else. I want to take those opportunities seriously. This could be one of those. To that end, I tend to find myself in favor of making the change to that aspect. But you know, I do appreciate that point. I wish it was clear. But it feels like that sometimes. Thank you.
City Administrator Brazel.
I just wanted to let council know I heard a lot of comments about working with the school district cooperatively. They did extend an invite today for council and the mayor to meet with them for a 1-hour meeting on January 27th. So I didn't want that to go by the wayside. And that's at 6 o'clock. And I'll make sure I keep council in the loop. But I didn't want that to get lost in the conversation.
What was the date?
January 27th at 6 o'clock would be 1 hour.
Is that before council?
It's actually on Monday, I believe.
Oh, it's on Monday?
Yeah, and it's...
Oh, their board meeting before?
Yeah, and it's to discuss topics of mutual interest, is what it's to discuss. So not specifically just mitigation fees, but that'd be part of it.
And we decided it long before we knew this was on the agenda.
No.
Same.
What date was that again?
27th. Councilmember
Cunningham.
Thank you.
I'm done, thank you.
Just a couple comments right now, but one thing I have appreciated about being on this council the last 4 years, one thing. Not just
one thing.
Just one thing. Has been, in listening to the other council members, the concern for the taxpayer. And, you know, really advocating to keep property taxes down, really advocating to make sure the burden of what we do doesn't fall on the taxpayer. When this issue came up before, I turned to Brad and I said, okay, if we lower these impact fees on things as important as infrastructure, roads, traffic mitigation, schools, those are all infrastructures that are really important to our community, somebody's got to pay for it. Who's going to pay for it? The burden will go on the taxpayer. So I just... You know, that's what I keep coming back to, are we are going to need more schools. We are going to need more roads as we grow. In my opinion, it's more fair and more desirable to try to keep the burden as limited to the taxpayer from the taxpayer as possible. And when I listen to other council members, you know, through the last 4 years, that has been a common theme, I think, among all of us. Has been really to limit that burden. So that's one thing I keep coming back to is making sure we always have that forefront. The second point has been, you know, I haven't, as Councilman Hanford mentioned, we do have building happening again. We are coming out of the recession. We are getting calls. We are seeing building. We are seeing builders come. I have not seen any evidence that lowering it from our 25, which is currently at, to 50, would have this influx that all of a sudden we'd have more builders. There's been no data or documentation that has shown us that doing this will change what's happening right now. So those are, you know, the kind of two things that I just keep coming back to. And as we talked about this probably on December 10th, I hope to hear from citizens and others on this issue, but those are the two things I keep coming back to. So, that's all I have right now.
Are you looking for anything, any direction tonight? Or?
No.
Okay.
No, this is for discussion.
All right. Thank you very much.
Just to see if you have any.
All right. Council, I've had a request to move the first executive session up into the agenda next, the timing issue. So, we're okay to do that.
Just here.
We need a motion for that.
Just a consensus.
So at this time, we'd like to go into our executive session, and I'll have the city attorney.
Governing body may hold during a regular and special meeting and executive session to put knowledge regarding such consideration would cause a likelihood of decreased price. However, final action selling or leasing public property shall be taken in a meeting open to the public.
Oh, there you go. Okay, so we have last item on new business is confirm mayor's appointment of the 2012-2015 Comprehensive Plan Citizen Advisory. Paul.
Thank you. I was here a couple weeks ago and kind of talked about the idea of forming a citizens advisory committee for this 2015 update, and we did contact a number of people, and we now have seven people. I'd like to add two names to the list that you got in your cover sheet. And those folks were Rick Hansen, the local builder, Todd Nelson, who lives up in Foothills, Anik, Ben from the Chamber, Sue Grassbury, who is PharmaSave, Katie Woods from the school district, is a latecomer that's not on the list. Tom DiDonato, and I'm very pleased to add Karen to the group. She left. But she's agreed to join this group as well, so we have a really good diversity. And I should tell you that with Karen, we have two Bohemians on this group, which is really going to make it a solid. But we're looking for your approval to appoint these folks to this advisory committee. This would kick off. Actually, I should mention that there was a community visioning workshop scheduled for December 5th. That has been moved to late January, tentatively January 23rd. And that event will really be the first step for this to get involved for this committee.
All right. I do not know who is first. I'm just going to call the order. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I'd like to move to approve appointments to the 2015 Comprehensive Plan Update Citizens Advisory Committee as recommended by staff.
Second. We do have a motion and a second. Motion made by Councilmember Camp, seconded by Councilmember Gearing. We have a light. Councilmember Kovac.
Thank you. Paul, just a couple questions. How was the outreach on this? Did these people contact us? I missed what you said. Did we reach out to them?
Most of those candidates participated in one-on-one interviews with the consultant back in October.
And was this posted, and then they applied and met with the consultant?
We reached out.
Okay.
Staff. We made up a list of potential candidates based on feedback. feedback from council and commission and all the staff. And then the consultant arranged interviews with, I'm not sure how many, and a good number of these folks were part of the interview process, which expressed some interest in the whole project. And then we reached out to Sue Grafska, and Katie Woods, who testified at the last public hearing for the school mitigation fees. She was a referral as an interested party. And Karen, I was asked her as a to bring a whole different perspective to this thing, a youth perspective. And so we got some pretty good diversity. But we didn't do a broadcast.
You didn't post it on the city website and see what came.
We didn't do that.
Okay. So it was more selective than that, just kind of get referrals from.
Right.
Kind of in house.
Kind of somewhat random process.
Okay.
But they're. I was talking with the consultant today, the Mind Mixer, the interactive web program. I don't think I had a chance to do this, June, but there were some potential issues with that, which have been resolved. And that's going to be coming online this next month. And that will really be a broad-based way to get people involved.
Okay.
In a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and that was my next question, was just because I know that there's a whole plan with community involvement. Part of it is the community visioning workshops and all of that, where there's going to be more input. And I think surveys, do surveys go out? Or
not sure about surveys. There are a number of different kinds of workshops, and they call them planning capsules.
And are those going to be more open to the community, where you just kind of, whoever wants to show up can show up to those community visioning workshops?
Yeah. Okay. We're going to be actively soliciting, like for this community visioning workshop, we're hoping to get a lot of people on.
Right, just people who want to come and participate,
right.
Not any kind of formal appointment process or screening process.
Right. This group would meet roughly on a quarterly basis, and the whole objective is to have a kind of a focus group of people that participate in this process just as regular people, and then give the staff and the consultants some feedback, some idea of how we're doing and how the public's receiving this, and what do we do to either adjust or continue what we're doing.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Come over here. Thanks. Yeah, it's, and the Mic Mixer is really cool. I was pleased to be able to be part of the group that was doing the selections, and that's really going to, that's a broad thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are going to be able to be involved if they want to. Mm-hmm. So it's really whoever's interested is going to get to do it, which is what we want, right? I mean, not everybody is going to, but they can do it. You know, you don't have to be like at a meeting to do that, right? That'll be for us.
It's 24/7.
Very convenient. I thought it was very inclusive. I mean, I thought that was one of the things that made this group the right selection, you know, as far as I was concerned. Anyway, yeah, I thought it was cool.
Okay.
All right, seeing no other lights, we'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries 6-0. All right, next up, council member reports. Council member Gearing.
Thank you. Just a quick one. There's a new Eagle Scout in town just 2 weeks ago. His name is Wyatt Smith from Troop 38. If you live north of Highway 2, which I will soon be a resident north of Highway 2, move into next week on Thursday. On the drains, you'll notice fresh paint on the drains, like with the fish, this leads to the river, that kind of stuff. And that was a big part of this project. I think every drain north of Highway 2 in the city should have that new paint on it. And so I noticed a lot of it walking around during campaign season. So
it's a tag. Is it paint?
I thought that was
right next to our kids' bus stop. I think it's a tag.
Is it a tag? I thought some of them were painted on, but yeah, maybe. Anyway, I did notice something, and that's where it's from. I just thought that was really cool. We happen to know them, and I mean, that's just something that really benefits the community. It's cool.
Is that the kid that she busted for graffiti?
Yeah. I'm going to say this, but this kid, no. Okay. Anyway, I thought that was very cool. Thank you.
Yes, I do have something. Just want to publicly recognize last week was Police and Fire Appreciation Week, and I attended a function at the fire station on Friday. It was well attended, and would like to publicly thank Pastor Michael Hamford and Sister Barber for organizing that and really paying attention to that. They've been doing it for, chief, how many years? Long time. 15, 16? Somewhere around there. And just great service all those police and fire do for our community. And was thinking and talking with some people there, it would be nice if council or the city, this body might do something next year that might show our appreciation. And the other thing that came up was possibly doing something for Veterans Day. And I was mentioning this to council member Hamford, is next year having us do something a little bit more in on Veterans Day. So that's it. Thank you.
Councilmember Campbell.
Thank you.
I echo Councilmember Kudbeck's comments. I attended the Fireman's Police Appreciation Luncheon and read the Mayor's Proclamation. And again, to Mr. Hanford and to Sister Barbara for putting this on. One thing that I really caught from all the speakers, although I read the Mayor's Proclamation there as well, one of the common themes I heard from all the speakers is everybody had a personal story involving the police department in a good way. So that was encouraging and really nice to hear. And I give my my thanks to the police and fire for their work. Thank you. Oh, and Saturday is the
Light Up
Monroe. And I have been volunteered, so if you are on the HERAT, wave to the crossing guards. I guess I'm going to have police training on how to stop traffic, so this will be fun.
I thought you would be Santa. No?
Should we try to keep that quiet? And I'm done.
It's a bit busy week this week. Thanksgiving, that's first and foremost. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody, and I know some are not here tonight because they're already have started their holiday, including the mayor. I always call it, it's F to the power of three: football, food, and family. Yeah. My three favorite things. So, it's a great week. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. And then an apple cup on Friday.
So good.
Ouch. Hey, you know, they're bowl eligible for the first time in a decade. It's good for them.
That's
good. Not sending an apple.
Oh my goodness, I'd like to just echo everything that's been said. Appreciate the police and fire. Heard great reports from the whole week and then Friday as well. Looking forward to the lineup Monroe. Planning to be there this year. Was planning last year and had sick kids, so that didn't work. Hoping and praying that this year works out. Looking forward to that. And happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Just want to add, in regards to the police and fire, I think the one thing, other thing I just wanted to point out is that, it's great, we have an appreciation week, but the other piece that I appreciate is there are so many involved in the community in leadership roles. I mean, every time I turn around, it's police officers, it's baseball coaches, football coaches, same thing on the fire department side, and just, not just a thank you for the service for the community and saving lives and protecting us, but then, they carry that into everything else they do. And every time I turn around, one's coaching my son or my daughter in some sort of sport. So I thank you there as well.
Yeah. Now, also, Apple Light of Monroe, that's fun time. And happy Thanksgiving to staff and council. Department reports. We've got just a few of you left. Paul, anything else to add?
Yeah, a couple things. I mentioned the visioning workshop in January on East Monroe. We are still waiting for a decision from the hearing examiner on the final environmental impact statement appeal. And a question for you. We have on the December 3rd agenda a discussion of all the comp plan elements. I would ask if you think that's something you want to continue any discussion on, or do we then come back on the 10th with our Planning Commission recommendation? Your pleasure.
I suppose we could discuss whatever needed to be discussed on the 10th. Could be done.
don't have to have two separate.
Has it been posted publicly on the agenda as of yet? It's not out
just
yet.
Draft agenda.
Just on the draft. When do we expect the hearing examiner?
We expect it by now.
I know, but
so we did send a query yesterday and not heard back.
Heard back.
Might be good to
wait till the 10th.
Then wait till the 10th, yeah.
I'm not going to be here on the 3rd, so.
Well, let's wait till the 10th.
Ben?
Nothing,
so.
Nothing.
Chief.
I have all kinds of things.
You have all kinds of things?
Yes. To start out with, on Thursday night, we had the Citizens Academy graduation. And it was a rough go for at least one of the graduates, but we did make it through. We've hired two new officers in the last month. They're two new individuals. They are not officers. They'll be going to the academy, one in March and one in April. We cannot schedule or cannot get a slot at the academy unless we give them a name, so we have to hire them first. And, they're really having a backup at the academy. They put two extra classes on this year, and we're still behind. So, and also the police and fire appreciation lunch, we really appreciated that. Appreciated that a council person cut it back in camp being there. And I was talking to Chief Bernard, and between the two of us, we've probably served all over the state. And this is really unique to Monroe. It's not like National Night Out Against Crime. This is unique to Monroe, and it's just a very, very special thing. And I know the officers appreciate it. And, you know, some of them, it's a good thing we don't have a weight policy, because some of them eat about twice their weight. it was a great time, and we really appreciate it. So. And lastly, I have a question for Councilperson Gamble. I forgot, what was the score between Washington and Oregon?
We got our butts kicked.
Oh, you did?
And half for the last decade. Okay. Now let's talk about the previous 90 years.
All right. Draft agenda?
Before that, I would just like to recognize the Public Works Department on a job well done. I think Council heard this week that we received another grant, and that'll be for the Torrance Place extension. So that's super exciting. We have a lot of transportation improvements next year. Agenda for Tuesday, December 3rd, 2013. Consent agenda. Under unfinished business, we have reviewed all 2013 comprehensive plan amendments that we were just talking about, which we're going to be moving. Review business, we have ordinance adopting 2014 budget, first reading, introduction, lease agreement, draft agenda for December 10th, 2013. Additions or deletions?
Councilmember Hanford.
Not regarding the 3rd. I'm looking at the 10th, and it kind of goes together with that. That's why I bring it up. If, just a point of clarification, if we get to the comprehensive plan amendments, based on our time schedule, we have to do first reading on the 10th and the 2nd and final on the 17th. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
So, the current schedule. If we talk, nip things through between now and the 10th, and we get to that comprehensive plan amendment, and the school discount fees portion gets voted down, so it it's not approved, is that going to throw our comprehensive plan amendment as a whole? You know, are we against the wall here? Because now all of a sudden we have to back up and say, well, wait a second, what are we going to do to fix this? We have 2 weeks or one more meeting. I'm just trying to think, because obviously I've stated my opinion, so if it goes the way I'd like to see it go, then this, we're not going to pass this school discount deal.
Will you, for a question?
Sure.
I'm just curious, because are we looking at this as two separate issues, or how many separate issues, with the actual fee rate versus the comprehensive plan changes? That was my understanding, there were separate issues on the agenda. Asking directly, question directly.
I have an answer for that. I guess we hadn't settled in my mind whether we have the kind of two different subjects, the whole process and the changing the comp plan and the code, and the discount rate is embedded in the municipal code. No,
does,
I don't. I
does
don't
it have to be a single unit, or can it be multiple?
It, maybe you can help me, Kristen, but maybe there's some options that you approve the comp plan amendment and adopt the school facilities plans, and you approve the municipal code as it's now written with a 50% discount, or you do the same approvals and you modify the content of the municipal code to reflect a 25% discount.
They should be three separate motions.
First read,
that's what.
And to your point, that's what I thought that was what was lined up last year. Was here's how it's worded.
Yes.
We're just going to leave this part the same. And I think that's how we actually ended up with it last year. It was just not touching it at all. But it was, you know, even if it's recommended at 50, just here's what we're going to do, but leave that 25.
I think last year it was brought in as at 50% in the municipal code.
Yeah. And
but then left no final action.
And that was, there were multiple motions for that last year, if I remember correctly.
So okay, that was my concern.
But I think, to your point, I think we're good.
I think you still have a floor, but I just wanted to make sure I understood. So we will have multiple motions on it. It will not be a up-down vote on one.
Well, right,
one vote for everything.
Different motions, but the code can be adopted with a change.
Good. Obviously, thanks. Just because of the calendar, you know, I just want to make sure we're taking into all those things into consideration. As I don't want to be here on the 24th.
Or the 23rd. Or
I won't be here on the
24th.
I guarantee you.
We're free on the 25th.
Thank you.
I'll participate long distance by phone. 2,000 miles away. So. All right.
Are you anything else, assuming Mr. Rudd?
Okay, do we still have to move right into the session? That's my understanding.
Okay. So,
yes. Yeah, can we, let's just do 10 minutes, and then if we need to extend, we can extend.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is for performance of the public employee.
Yes. The governing body may hold an executive session during a regular or special meeting to evaluate the qualifications of an applicant for public employment or to review the performance of a public employee. However, subject to RCW 4230-144, discussion by a governing body of salaries, wages, and other conditions of employment to be generally applied within the agency shall occur in a meeting open to the public, and when a governing body elects to take final action, hiring, setting the salary of an individual employee or class of employee, or discharging or disciplining an employee, that action shall be taken in a meeting open to the public.
Ten minutes, and then we'll look in if we need to.
Yeah. All right, Councilmember Hunter.
Yes, thanks. We had talked earlier, Gene, about the City Minister Roswell about swearing in of the new
council members. Is that something you want to talk about right now? So we can.
It's a good point.
I'm missing.
Okay.
Liz and I have done a bit of research trying to figure out when to do the swearing in of the new council members and the new mayor. And because the first council meeting is until the 7th of January, we'd be going essentially a week, a business week, without anybody in office. So we did some research, and the rules say that you can swear in 10 days in advance of the office taking place, or the date of the office taking place, or at the last business meeting of the council or board. And so at any rate, we called and confirmed, and the county did confirm that we could do it on the 17th of December, because that is our last scheduled meeting at this point. And so the thought was that we could do the swearing in at like 6 o'clock on the 17th, and then have our regular meeting after that at 7 o'clock. People could come and go. But then we had a brief discussion earlier tonight that maybe some council members would rather have it on the 7th of January. So hearing, we just want to have some consensus on where council wants to go on that. If my preference, at least in the mayor position, to have the mayor sworn in on the 17th, because then we've got actually somebody that can pay bills, sign contracts, or anything like that that may come up in that 7-day period. So here, I'd like to have some discussion on that.
No, thank you. With regard to the mayor, and we talked about this previously in our committee meeting tonight. If that makes sense, that would be 5 business days, essentially without anybody in charge at the beginning of January. For council members, there's nothing to do until the 7th, ultimately. And that's an awesome time for family and stuff to come. And, it's the new year. I would want to leave council members swearing in to the first meeting. But for mayor, I do think that makes sense from a business standpoint. I know my family likes to come and stuff, and doing it after the holidays, a little less distraction and whatnot, so for the council members. But if we really, if we really need it, that makes sense, although as long as people don't think we have 2 mayors at one time or something. Weird, swearing in, well, but whatever. If it's all checked off with people, then it's something that is going to help, then why not?
Councilmember Andrew?
Yeah, I concur. I prefer for council members for the new year. Totally understand if there's some logistical reason why that won't work, but.
Find out what we're doing.
Well, I'm just Elon.
Whether or not he tells you.
Let me ask this, because it is a big occasion when somebody gets sworn in up here. So can we have the mayor sworn in on the 17th so we have someone available for the 5 of 7 days? And then can we be re-sworn in at the first council meeting so we can have everybody there? Is that a possibility or just something you can't
do? I don't think there's anything that prohibits doing it twice, but I'd have to research that.
And to that point, if the city clerk can do it, and you need someone on day one, whatever the first day of business is, January 2, have Jeffrey come in and have him sworn in on Wednesday or whatever it is. And then we could have the big hoopla on the 7th with everybody there. So if the city clerk can do it,
and she can,
then have him come in on the 2nd, get sworn in, he can sign whatever he needs to sign for the bills, and then let's have the big hoopla on the 7th.
Which I think would be more appropriate.
I will head in that direction to get confirmation. That seems reasonable.
Okay. Since I'm still looking for one more question, so are we bringing the judge?
We certainly can ask.
I would recommend Trish.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Bring me second. Trish Lanzos.
And do I saw the floor?
Until you stop talking.
Thank you. I move that we adjourn.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion from the Councilman Camp. Second from Councilman Andrew to the meeting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries 6-0.
I think that was a classic.
Good.